On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. You've got to hand it to her. Hillary Clinton does not quit. She toughed out the rough end of her husband's presidency, dived in herself to become a popular and respected U.S. senator from New York, built a campaign like few others in history, with its huge war chest, big brain trust, relentless organization, and, of course, Bill. But for all that, the Hillary 08 campaign is no cakewalk. Obama wants to turn the page. Edwards is leading in Iowa polls. Two big biographies are about to land, and who knows what they'll say. Al Gore is in the wings. Up next on Point, Hillary Clinton's big campaign for the White House. Joining me first today from New York is Patrick Healy, reporter for the New York Times. He covers Hillary Clinton's campaign full-time, covered her last Senate campaign, too. Patrick Healy, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. Great to have you with us. You're out there with her all the time, on the hustings, all over the place. I guess for starters, Patrick, give us a sense, if you can, of how Hillary's campaign sees things going right now.
The theory of their case, as they like to put it, is that this is going to be a competency election. It's not going to be a hopes and dreams election, which is what Barack Obama represents. It's going to be a reaction to the last 6.5, 7, and eventually 8 years of the Bush administration that they see as a record of mismanagement, incompetence, wrong-headed, uncommon-sense leadership, and that Hillary Clinton, essentially, from her 8 years as First Lady and then her, 7 to 8 years in the Senate, represents a return to what they see as proper management and competency, that she is, and she offers this when she's on the campaign trail, arguing essentially that she knows how to get things on the right track, middle ground track in Washington, and that she would bring a level of intelligence, scrutiny, rationale, and rationality to the job.
A competency election. How's the theory of the campaign then holding up in the field?
Well, that's the thing. Right now, a lot of Democrats want passion. You know, they want troops out of Iraq. They want some sort of excitement from a nominee who they hope will recapture the White House after 8 years. And so, you know, she gets applause, support, warm receptions when she's out there on the trail. But, you know, she's running third in Iowa right now. I talked to the former governor there, Tom Vilsack, the other day, who's supporting Hillary, and he's been very blunt. He says, you know, we're losing in Iowa right now. You've got John Edwards, who speaks very much from the heart, and Barack Obama, who does the same, who are ahead of Hillary in Iowa. They see that as an organizational challenge. It's interesting with the Clinton people. Everything is always sort of strategic. It's organization. It's having a playbook, you know, like Bill Clinton likes to say, that can put it together.
You know, we've heard so much about that organization, that machine, the playbook, but then here's the Des Moines Sunday Register poll numbers. With Edwards in the lead with 29%, Barack Obama 23%, Hillary 21%.
Yep.
Is there something in the machine, in the organization, just waiting to be sprung here? Is there some great, mechanism beneath the waves that we just don't see yet?
Well, you know, they take a lot of comfort in all the endorsements that they're getting that are below the radar screen that a lot of reporters, you know, don't care about enough to do daily stories on. But, you know, Ed Muskie had a ton of endorsements, and that fell apart. You know, it's a little unclear whether she's ultimately going to be able to put that, at least the organization, together in a way that swamps Obama, that swamps Edwards. One thing is she's raising a lot of money, Tom, and as you know, and a lot of your listeners know, the 2008 primaries the schedule has become quite compressed, and having a lot of money, the ability to advertise in the big states is going to be huge, and Hillary right now at least is poised to have a huge war chest to be able to fund that advertising.
And with Florida moving up, that announcement just yesterday, even more pressure on that front loading here.
Yep.
What about the polls around the country? We look at Iowa. Is it the same nationally, or is it a dappled picture? What's it look like?
No, she's better. Iowa is sort of the worst place in a sense, but she still has a pretty good lead in New Hampshire. She sort of teeters with Barack there, but she's doing pretty fine. And overall, in the national polls, you know, she's usually about 10 points ahead. The latest polls have had her about 10 points ahead of Barack. But the thing is that national polls at this early stage are so much about name recognition, you know, that it's really hard to tell whether that'll carry it. But in those big states, she is the best known still, you know, so she is technically ahead.
Patrick, listen with us for just a second, if you would, here to Hillary Clinton, Senator Clinton, kicking off her campaign with a recorded web statement. Here she lays out her vision of America using President Bush's implied failures as a backdrop.
You know, after 6 years of George Bush, it is time to renew the promise of America. Our basic bargain, that no matter who you are or where you live, if you work hard and play by the rules, you can build a good life for yourself and your family. I grew up in a middle-class family in the middle of America, and we believed in that promise. I still do. I've spent my entire life trying to make good on it, whether it was fighting for women's basic rights or children's basic health care, protecting our Social Security or protecting our soldiers. It's a kind of basic bargain. And we've got to keep up our end.
Senator Clinton announcing her candidacy. Patrick Healy, is that still the core message? Is that what you hear? Is that the heart of the stump speech?
That's still it, Tom. And boy, does that sound like Bill Clinton, you know? that clip, I mean, the basic bargain, you know, work hard and play by the rules.
Right.
I grew up in the middle of the country. I mean, this very much is her offering herself as sort of a, you know, in a way, sort of a Midwestern moderate. She was a former Goldwater girl. You know, she talked about, you know, supporting Republicans in the 60s. I mean, she really is sort of basically trying to appeal to people's just sense of a down-the-middle Democrat.
And yet, this is Clinton, too. This is a different Clinton. How would you compare? There's a lot of Bill Clinton messaging in there.
Absolutely. I mean, it's really interesting, Tom. I was down in New Orleans with her on Saturday with families that were still flooded out by Katrina. If Bill Clinton had been there, he would have been hugging everybody around. He would have been touching them. His arm would have been around people. It's so interesting watching also a female candidate run. She can't, in a way, hug people and embrace people the same, you know, the same way. She tries to use the language of Bill Clinton. But the thing about Hillary is that she is just, she's very, very smart. She's sort of a, she projects sort of her lawyer first persona. And there's not a lot of sort of charisma or emotional language that bleeds out. So while she can connect with people and she sort of moderated her voice in a way, as you just heard in that clip, you know, some of her sort of Midwestern nasal is a little bit toned down. She still, it's interesting. There's still not that kind of emotional connection that you saw sort certainly with Bill Clinton and to some extent with Barack and Edwards.
Do you have any sense of how Hillary Clinton thinks about that? Many people remark on it, very smart, but a little bit wooden, a kind of, you know, Sphinx-like in a certain way, not the same touch and feel factor. Intellectually, how does she look at that?
Well, look, she's very direct about this stuff. She says, you know, I am who I am. It would be a disaster to do Gore 2000 and hire a lot of consultants to try to come off as different than you are. Bill Clinton was a singular political character. I can't try to mimic him. You know, she says, I have my set of strengths. You know, I have a combination of, you know, sort of head and heart. I'm a policy wonk. I love the nitty-gritty. You know, I'll do everything that I can to support, you know, parents and children in this country. I've got the right ideas for the time. You know, I think, again, sort of this idea of a competency election, they're very much hoping that Americans will be voting on the merits and on a Democratic program, and not necessarily just on the candidate that might make them feel, you know, gooey on the inside.
Right. So policy wonk, you say, and she's going to put policy front and center, not necessarily charisma. So what is her policy profile look like? Is this Clinton 2 on that front? How would it be different from the George W. Bush years? Broad stroke, policy-wise, where does she point the country?
Well, on foreign policy, I think that it's sort of a multilateral approach. I mean, it's the idea, and a lot of it was what Kerry talked about in 2004. It's about rebuilding alliances, rebuilding America's standing in the world, using Bill Clinton and other high-profile Democrats as sort of ambassadors and troubleshooters, basically getting most troops out of Iraq, but not all, very important, not all. She would have a reduced force still with limited missions that would stay in Iraq, a fairly complicated scenario that she sets up for herself. On domestic policy, it's a pretty progressive agenda, but she hasn't laid out a lot of the details yet. She talks about certainly universal health care, universal pre-K, some kind of a poverty initiative in terms of dealing with lower income Americans, what she calls sort of smart trade. She and Bill Clinton are different on that. Bill Clinton was a real free trader. Mm-hmm. Hillary's got some more restrictions there, but a fairly progressive agenda. The one thing she hasn't talked a lot about is taxes and how she would deal with it. She has said that she would roll back sort of the top Bush tax cuts, but in terms of that universal health care program, a lot of people, a lot of Democrats are watching that. It's a little unclear how she would pull that off.
Patrick, how does her campaign look at the challenges in the party? Obama, Edwards, maybe Gore one day.
Yep. They're paying, a huge amount of attention to all. They're very uncertain about Barack Obama, how sort of what the trajectory of his campaign is going to be, whether he continues to catch fire and build momentum. But the thing is, that debate a couple weeks ago, Tom, where Barack Obama had a little bit of trouble answering a question about terrorism, mm-hmm. whereas Hillary came out saying, I will retaliate, I will destroy
Fierce.
Them.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't quite gates of hell like right. John McCain chasing Osama.
But somewhere in that terrain.
The fact that she said that she would destroy people, to them is projected a sense of strength that Barack doesn't have. On Gore, they're keeping their eyes very closely. But what they hear and what I've heard on Al Gore is that for him to get in would really require Hillary to stumble badly, Barack to be fading. And Hillary's people, their attitude is, we're not stumbling. We're going to go at this hard and stay disciplined and we'll be fine.
And Bill?
Oh, boy. He's in the thick of it, Tom. He's right there. He's sort of her, strategist-in-chief, fundraiser-in-chief. He reads the speeches. He gives advice on policy. But as we can all tell, he's not out there publicly. You don't see him on the evening news talking up Hillary. They're trying to deploy him very strategically, but keep him out of the spotlight.
Patrick Healy, thanks very much for being here. We're talking this hour about Hillary Clinton's campaign for the White House. We've got some great guests lined up for this hour, but first let's listen to Hillary Clinton for just a minute here in an interview yesterday with Matt Lauer on NBC's Today Show. Senator Clinton deflected questions about Senator Barack Obama, her challenger within the Democratic Party, of course. He has noted recently that a big difference between the candidates is that Clinton voted to authorize the Iraq War. He wasn't in the Senate, but he opposed it. Former President Bill Clinton has stepped into the fray to defend his wife, to try and show up her anti-war credentials. Lauer touched on that.
But your husband did say this, and I'm quoting here, this dichotomy that's been set up to allow him, and he's referring to Senator Obama, to become the raging hero of the anti-war crowd on the internet is just factually inaccurate, end quote. But is it really inaccurate?
Well, you'll have to ask him exactly what he meant, but I think he was referring to the voting records that most Democrats have. We have all voted the same way when we've had the responsibility to vote, and that has been to try to begin to reverse course in Iraq. I think most people are really intent upon us moving out of Iraq as soon as we reasonably can.
Hillary Clinton looking to thread the needle and maybe dodge the question a little bit there yesterday on NBC's Today Show. Joining us now from New York is Joe Klein, political columnist for Time Magazine, author of Politics Lost, How American Democracy Was Trivialized by People Who Think You're Stupid, and The Natural, and of course, Primary Colors, first put out under the authorship of Anonymous. Joe Klein, great to have you. Thanks for being with us today.
Good to be here, Tom. How are you?
Very well. With us, Joe, also from Washington, Jill Lawrence, national political correspondent for USA Today. She co-writes the On Politics blog at usatoday.com. She's reported on the last five presidential elections. Jill, great to have you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
Joe, first to you. Raging hero in that quote there. Is Hillary Clinton going to end up the raging hero of her party?
I don't know. I think it's going to be tough. I think that the biggest advantage she has is what Patrick Healy was talking about is a thorough command of the issues, and especially national security issues, which is a rare thing for a Democrat. But the biggest thing that she has going against her is her last name. I think, this is essentially a gut bucket populist kind of country. We don't like dynasties. And in the year 2008, we will have had Bushes and Clintons in the White House for 20 years.
Yep.
And I think that a lot of the public is going to conclude that the office is too precious to keep trading back and forth between these two prohibitively weird families.
Jill Lawrence, you've been out there on the campaign trail with her, and recently, what are you seeing coming back from her audiences, from the people who turn out and don't turn out for Hillary? What's the word?
Well, one of the most instructive things that I saw was last month I was with her in Fort Drum, and this is a military installation in her state.
Upstate New York, yep.
Right, and it has the most deployed, or they say the most deployed Army unit to Iraq and Afghanistan. And so she's up there, and she's got good reason to be there. She's on the Senate Armed Services Committee, and it's in her state. And she's meeting with commanders and, you know, behaving. You could see her as a commander-in-chief. And one of the things that happened is she was supposed to meet with a few soldiers who are having problems with military health benefits.
Right.
And they had to enlarge this meeting. 40 people wanted to come and talk to her. And they were not all from New York State, as you can imagine. Many of them were from red states, conservative states, and they were all having problems. They'd all been wounded.
When you say people, these are vets, wounded vets who wanted to talk with Hillary Clinton.
That's right. And they were all in the room with her, and they started out by telling her their name and where they came from and where they were, what country they were wounded in. And she was not... She didn't hug anybody, you know. She wasn't emotional, but she was a pit bull on her promises to get them help, and even vowed to send her own caseworkers there from her own office to help them. And when it was over, you know, there was no applause or anything like that, but they all lined up in the hallway to shake her hand. So, you know, this is the celebrity factor is part of it. The fact that she's in the places that, you know, to help people where they need help. And the flip side of that, of course, is in our most recent poll, the USA Today Gallup poll, her unfavorable rating was 47%, which is actually an improvement over April. And that's twice as high as some of the Republicans and some of the other Democrats. So she's got a lot of work to do. Generally.
High negatives still in there. But Jill, you saw her then chatting at the bedside of wounded veterans. Does the warmth thing happen there, even there? Or are you saying even there it doesn't? The standoffishness is there.
Well, it wasn't at the bedside. They were sitting at tables in a conference room.
Okay.
They were recovering.
A little
she
more
comes
formal
across,
setting. Then.
Right. You know, one of her big advantages is she's very consistent, unlike the past two Democratic nominees. She is, as Patrick said, who she is, and she knows her stuff. And she's trying to help. You know, she believes that government can help. Mm. And she's trying to make it work as well as it can for these people. And I think, you know, at least in this situation, that was enough. Now, when you run for president, that's a whole other equation. And, you know, you do need a little bit of the vision thing. I just don't know whether what she's got is going to be enough.
Joe Klein, you wrote 2 years ago now in a column for Time. You said, I like Senator Clinton. She's got a wicked, ironic sense of humor, a great raucous belly laugh. In private, easily masters difficult issues. You also wrote, I think that a Clinton presidential candidacy in 08 would be a disaster on many levels. How is this campaign turning out like and unlike you expected, Joe?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, what I was thinking as Jill was describing that scene up at Fort Drum is what Bill would have been like in that circumstance.
All over
the
those guys.
The room would have been a pool of tears. Everybody would have been crying
right.
and hugging. She ain't him.
yeah. But then we've been there and
you know,
done that.
I think that, first of all, 2 years is a long time in journalism.
It sure is.
And I still think that I don't think it's a disaster because we have another disaster that has superseded it, and that is the disaster in Iraq. And the country is in really, bad shape right now. You know, 70% of the people are saying that the country's moving in the wrong direction. There's tremendous concern about the war. There's tremendous concern about health care and global warming and a whole bunch of other things. And so the seriousness of the moment, I think, kind of overwhelms an awful lot of what I was saying back then, except for the part about her competence. Although, as I said before, I still believe that, you know, there's a real reluctance on the part of many people who I talk to when I go out and travel with her, to buy into the dynasty. But it isn't just wounded soldiers that she is good with when it comes to military affairs. Mm. You know, I've had very prominent generals say to me, you know, I asked them, is there any Democrat who kind of understands the way you think? And one guy said to me, you mean aside from Hillary?
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Same thing in the intelligence community.
Let me ask you about the
really respect her.
Let me ask you about the dynasty business, Joe. I mean, Americans have done it before. George W. Bush is sitting there. It's not the first time in history we've seen many dynasties. In any case, is that really the heart of it? Is it people thinking we just don't want another President Clinton, or is it we don't want to go back to the 90s? Barack Obama always says, "Let's turn the page."
I think that there are a couple of things here. It's not just another President Clinton. It is, and not just going back to the 90s, which I think certainly is a part of this. But there's also the sense that Washington has become a kind of closely held corporation that excludes an awful lot of Americans. And that was also true in 1824 when you had John Quincy Adams, part of the first dynasty elected president. And there was a massive populist reaction to, what was then called the era of good feeling.
Yep.
In 1828 when Andrew Jackson was elected. I think, there are ebbs and flows in American politics. I think there's a real pendulum shift going on after 30 years of Republican intellectual dominance, conservative intellectual dominance, moving back toward the center in the country. And I think there may be a shift away from, the perception of a closely held Washington.
So bust it up, break it up a little bit. I want to listen for just a moment to that voice of Bill, a master strategist to the campaign. The Times writes recently, he recorded an extended web ad for his wife's campaign. Let's listen here, Joe, Jill. He's referencing her larger than typical role as First Lady and her as a peacemaker.
Hillary is heavily respected all around the world. And that is so important at a time when we need to stop making enemies and start making allies again. In my first term, Hillary, in effect, was the face of America in Africa, in India. She went to Beijing to the International Women's Conference and gave an unbelievable speech.
That it is no longer acceptable to discuss women's rights as separate from human rights.
Now that she's in public office and I'm just in public service working on AIDS and development around the world, I still meet people in villages in Africa, Asia, Latin America who say to me, you'll never know how much your wife's speech in Beijing meant to us.
And there it is, that reach out and kind of hug you voice of Bill Clinton. Jill, it's an asset in a way, but it also highlights Hillary's little more stiff demeanor on balance. Is this working for her, Big Bill?
Well, I think, as Patrick pointed out earlier, he's working for her, but he's not working very visibly, at least not at this point. And my understanding is that, they're not going to make the same mistake Al Gore made. They realize he's a big advantage. I think I agree with Joe that her biggest disadvantage is that her last name is Clinton. So, in terms of money, yeah, that's good. And in terms of the personality and the political skills, well, I think people understand that she is who she is. It's they may even give her a pass on the dynasty thing because she's a woman.
Mm-hmm.
It's unclear, if that's going to cancel it out. But when I talked to her in Fort Drum, I asked her about the dynastic aspects and did she think it was healthy for the country to have these alternating Bush and Clinton presidencies. And I have to say she was a little defensive. She basically said it's a free country. People can vote for anyone they want to. So, that's how she's handling that issue.
So if they want me, they can have me, whatever my surname, my family name may be.
That's right.
Let's take a call from South Carolina. Jan's on the line. Hi, Jan.
Oh, hi.
What do you see down there, Jan?
Well, I just went to the South Carolina Democratic Convention. Edwards is the leader here, of course, because he is...
born in South Carolina, yep.
Yeah, we like Hillary, but we like her to stay in the Senate. We're really worried about all this stuff with the Rose Law Firm and Hubble and all this stuff coming back, and it'll be another Swift Boat situation. But 90% of the people I talk to, if Gore runs, they're going to support Gore.
And what if it is Hillary in the end? Will people come out and, bang the drums for her, Jan?
Well, we'll certainly vote for her. Yeah, we'll try to campaign for her because we've got to have a change of government. But we're really worried about all the scandals and rumors. And it was awful, with Kerry and that stupid Swift Boat thing. And, there are people who made a career out of, you know, getting up dirt on Hillary and Bill.
Right, and we've seen a lot of it laid out, but then a lot of it didn't amount to so much. Jan, thanks for that. Joe Klein, is this a swift, votable candidate, Hillary Clinton?
Well, I think the Democrats in general are less swift, votable than they were because they've learned the lesson after the two disastrous candidacies that they've had for president. And also, I mean, you know, she's so well known and her past has been so picked over that it's going to be hard. I mean, they'll try and throw things at her. Rudy Giuliani did in the last Republican debate, said that she believed that an unfettered capitalist market was the worst thing about America. I don't know whether she said that.
But, I somehow doubt it.
But, you know, an unfettered capitalist market is, as most conservatives understand, a complete disaster for any country.
I was just going to say that she said it was the engine of our prosperity, but shouldn't run roughshod over people.
Yeah, which is a very Bill Clinton kind of way of framing it. And so there it is, Jill. But you hear Jan in South Carolina says she's all right, but there's that wistful kind of longing for something else.
Yeah, no, I know. And, you know, the deal is that we have a track record in this country in the television age. The presidency has changed parties 6 times since John Kennedy. And in 5 of those 6 times, it went to a relatively inexperienced person, at least in terms of Washington experience. Kennedy beat Nixon in 1960. In 1968, both Nixon and Hubert Humphrey had about the same amount of experience. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Carter beat a sitting president, Gerald Ford, in 1976. Ronald Reagan beat a sitting president in 1980. Bill Clinton beat a sitting president in 1992. And George W. Bush beat Al Gore, sitting vice president, in 2000. So, you know, Hillary is a very, very familiar figure. She is practically an incumbent. And
you're saying that works against her in this case.
Yeah, I think it does. And the other problem that fits into this from her campaign's point of view is that there, you know, the experience isn't a theme. It's just a resume. And there isn't an overriding theme to her campaign.
Jill, does it feel that way on the hustings? Is competency the theme? Is that enough?
You know, I'm not sure that people are flocking to her for competency. The name recognition certainly is something, and the fact that she's a woman excites a lot of people. And, you know, there's a lot of arguments being made this year, not by her, but by other candidates, that judgment is what matters, not competency, and all you need to do is, or not experience, and all you need to do is look at the Bush administration for proof. So, you know, voters may well make that calculation that and I think it depends really on how this all unfolds over the next few months, how Obama and Edwards do in debate performances, and, you know, just how well Hillary Clinton wears. And but I mean, it's true that experience is her selling point, and that's what she talks about. I'm not sure that's going to be the determinative factor.
Those numbers in Iowa, what do they reflect, Jill? Is it Edwards on the ground there for so long with a big, very, you know, buttonholing, detailed candidacy already? Why is she in third place?
Well, it's a populist type of state, and she didn't go there for a very long time. She had a big absence. And Edwards did very well there in 2004. He came in second and a surprise finish. And I think a lot of people there still remember him. And he's been really the most straightforward from a policy standpoint about what exactly he would do. You know, Hillary Clinton, when I spoke to her, she told me, you know, I said, you talk about universal health care. How are you going to do it? And she talked about children. And I said, so mm-hmm. we will not then expect a universal health care plan from you during this campaign. And she said, oh, I didn't say that. I wouldn't say that. So she's, you know, playing her cards close to the vest.
Mm. Let's listen to just a little bit of Hillary Clinton in another one of these recorded statements on her website, talking about the need for change in Iraq policy, urging unity among Democrats, and predicting how her presidency would handle the issue.
I know we're at the start of a presidential campaign, but I think all Democrats should be focused on working together to push the president to change course. We have to end this war in a smart way. Not a Republican or a Democratic way, but a way that makes us safer and gets our troops home as soon as possible. That's what I'll be fighting for. But let me be clear. If George Bush doesn't end this war before he leaves office, when I'm president, I will.
If he doesn't, I will, says Hillary Clinton. Let's take a call from Marshalltown, Iowa. Tim, you're on the air.
Good day, Tom.
Hi.
We both Hillary and Barack Obama have been in town last month, and the difference between their appearances is just pretty stark. It really tracks what Mr. Klein and Ms. Lawrence were talking about. We're a 25,000 population town, blue collar with some upper class, and the bottom line is when Obama came, you couldn't have given all the tickets away. It was a phenomenal response. It was packed. They had to turn people into anterooms when he walked through. I'm young enough to remember, or old enough to remember Kennedy. And I mean, people wanted to touch him, wanted to shake his hand. Everybody wanted to see him. Tons of
big hullabaloo. Everybody turning out there. Yep, that's
people,
Barack.
People brought their kids. I mean, yep. They wanted to see him. Hillary was there 2 weeks later. They had a good audience, but tepid response. Applause lines when they were there. It's more of a traditional campaign. It's more of a campaign you'd think from a 60-year-old white guy.
Tim, do you think the fever means votes for Barack Obama and not for Hillary, or is that just enthusiasm for a fresh face right now?
It's a populist state, as your commentator pointed out, and he's building momentum. It feels like he's building momentum. People are talking about him. Edwards has practically lived here like Gephardt did in the past when he ran. And he certainly has a lot of momentum. People really like him. But Obama's got something going on, and you hear people talking about it. After his appearance in Ames and after his appearance in Marshalltown, if you had a button or something, people ask you about him. And I'm not with either campaign. I just happen to be associated with the college. But, people care. They connect. They want to know what he's about. And I think it's going to turn into something.
Yeah, we hear it. Joe Klein, give us your interpretation of years on that. I mean, you've given us the TikTok of how administrations come and go, Republican, Democrat, in the sort of yearning for the fresh face. But does Barack Obama's charisma carry him through, or at a certain point does it leave him exposed as exciting but insubstantial? How do you see that playing out?
Well, if I knew, I would be in a different line of work. But, this is, fresh faces are very difficult to call. And in fact, all political races, an open race like this one is incredibly difficult to call, since a lot of it is out of the hands of the candidates and in the hands of the insurgents in Iraq and Al-Qaeda elsewhere. But, Obama is going to have, he's going to have a second act. He's going to have to come up with some really serious and good policy proposals. And in these debates, he's going to have to be better than he was in the first one. I mean, you or maybe Patrick,
Patrick
earlier,
was saying,
referenced the question of what you would do if two American cities were attacked by Al-Qaeda. And, Obama's answer didn't vaguely address the fact that he would go after them.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, he could have turned it into an effective, or any of them, and none of the Democrats answered this question really well. They could have said, unlike the current president, I would track him down and I would find him and I would focus like a laser beam, in the famous words of Bill Clinton, on finding whoever did it, and I won't rest until it stopped, unlike this president. But you didn't see him do that. And so, over time, that kind of thing might hurt him.
Jill, do you see a scenario in which these two team up as a ticket at some point? And I'm not sure in what combination, but is that a possibility?
It's funny that you mentioned that. I was just thinking that would be one solution to who gets the black vote.
They both do.
Right. I mean, on the one hand, there are two senators born in Illinois, or not born in Illinois, but she was born there and he's from there. So it's not, in a sense, very diverse that way. But they do balance each other out in some ways. She's very detail-oriented. He's inspirational. I think there's probably more to him, judging by his record in the Illinois legislature and his experience as a community community organizer. Mm-hmm. But we haven't seen much of that yet, as Joe said. He hasn't shown much of that. But, theoretically, they'd probably do okay together if you also put aside the historical fact that it's very hard to get elected from the Senate.
Mm-hmm. Joe, can you picture that ticket, practically speaking, realistically emerging?
The ticket that I'm hearing about far more often, especially from money people, is a Gore-Obama ticket.
Mm-hmm. With Gore at the top of that ticket.
A lot of the money people right now in the Democratic Party are kind of ticked off at the Clintons for the arm twisting that went along with the fundraising in the first quarter. And that's a problem. You know, I don't know how important money people are anymore. There's the internet, and then there's the fact that people have kind of gotten bored with, you know, they have clickers now. They can click off, you know, television advertising,
right,
which is what money's all about. But sure, it's possible. I'd like to make one other point, though, about, and this is a point very much in Hillary's favor.
Mm.
When I was with her in Red Oak, Iowa, a few weeks ago, she was asked, how would you get out of Iraq? And she gave an incredibly nuanced answer and even opened up a, you know, what has now become an interesting debate, which is she doubted whether she would leave troops there to train the Iraqis, since there's a good argument to be made that you're just training militia
members. Combatants, right.
And that is, you know, that first of all, she was 2 weeks ahead of the curve on an argument that's just beginning to be made now, you know, in the public square. And second of all, there isn't another Democrat, or I would venture to say a Republican, who could have come up with that answer. You know, when I asked John Edwards, you say you want to pull out 50,000 troops immediately. Which troops? From where? What would you do with the remaining troops? He didn't have a clue. So I think that this, you know, if we're at war, you know, we are at war. And if we're going to really be serious about that, you know, she's probably the candidate, I might say, in either party who knows most about it.
Yeah, fascinating to imagine what happens to the fever for Obama when it comes closer and closer to that reality. Let's get a call from Wendy in Raleigh, North Carolina. Wendy, you're on the air.
Hi, it's Tom. How you doing?
Hi, great. What do you see?
Well, I'm actually a Democrat that I've said that Hillary was unelectable, and I've even gotten the stuff in the mail, you know, support Hillary. I did it the first, and then I started thinking twice about it and thinking she's unelectable because of the baggage and the haters, including my own parents. But I had a sudden inspiration recently.
Yeah?
I believe that there is something they can use Bill for. He is able to stand for nonpartisan critical causes. He's able to unify people. And he can unify people on critical causes completely outside the campaign.
So you'd vote for Hillary to get Bill back in the White House? Is that what you're saying, or something else?
No, I'm not saying that. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that I actually trust her. I trust her judgment, and I believe in her. And I think that she can use Bill, despite all the negatives and all the baggage, if he just ignites us. We need to be ignited. I need to be passionate. I need to be inspired about something, and Bill Clinton can do that for me. I would stand on the top of my house for him if I believed in what he was saying at the same time.
Well, there's a question, Wendy, and thanks for putting it on the table. Jill, can Bill come in and be the kind of charisma jetpack on this campaign in the home stretch?
Well, that's an interesting question. It's a different way of balancing a ticket, I guess.
Yeah.
The spouse. I mean, she said that if she's elected president, she would make him ambassador to the world. And that is something that he's very qualified to do. He's already doing it, in a sense, with his work through his foundation. And that's also something that Democrats talk about all the time, that they want to see more of, you know, this you know, make friends, not enemies, abroad, and work with people to work with other countries. So, I mean, I guess that's conceivable that he – I'm not sure about a charisma jetpack. But I will say one thing about Iowa and the fact that Hillary Clinton maybe isn't the most charismatic candidate. Iowa went crazy for Howard Dean in 2004. And as I said, John Edwards did very well there, too, after not starting off well. So it's all very unpredictable. And there are people who've known her for a long time who swear that she wears very well, you know, that she's just she's not emotional, but she's friendly. And so and she's smart. And you know, if people feel like she's got their interests at heart, maybe that's gonna work for her with a little bit of assist from her husband.
Joe, how do you see this playing out? You followed these two for a long time. As it gets closer and the stakes grow higher, how do you see Bill Clinton's role in the campaign emerging, and how do you see the public's anticipation of him in the White House?
I think you have a constitutional amendment that says you can only be president for two terms. And if it seems that he's dominating her, and that this, and she's you know, a Trojan horse leading to, you know, another Clinton, Bill Clinton presidency, where he would have undue influence, then you're going to have big problems, I think. And also the other problem there is that you have the same sort of problem that you had at Coretta King's funeral, where the two of them are there, they both speak, and he totally dominates, and so he makes her seem even less charismatic by comparison.
So maybe
it's a very difficult problem that for the campaign to work through, especially since we are breaking totally new ground here.
Yeah, we sure are. So he's out there, but maybe has to be kept in the wings, no matter how much you may chomp at the bit. Let's go to Milford, Connecticut, and you'll guess, you're on the air.
Greetings.
Hi.
I wanted to make a couple comments here. People say that Hillary Clinton comes across as somewhat stiff, almost wooden. But they have to recognize that she is an extraordinarily bright and somewhat of an intellectual. But more important is that she had to endure 8 very long years of Republican Congress where all those Republican House and Senate members were hell-bent on only one objective, and that is to destroy the Clintons for being Clintons. Any human being who has to endure that vulture-like surrounding for 8 long years becomes tough. The persona becomes stiff after a while. It's a natural thing to happen.
So, but still, you've got to win an election. Can she win it with that persona, however it was formed?
Absolutely, and because she has got the greatest asset that any candidate would like to have, and that is called Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
And I came to this country from India, and I must tell you that outside of the walls of this country, there is God, then there is Bill Clinton. That's how much he's adored and admired.
your guess, we've got the perspective. Joe, how about it? It's been put out there and asserted that Hillary's sort of a Mona Lisa smile, her Sphinx-like face, when that's what she's showing, it does in part have to do with the complexity of her marriage to this man and her inability to talk fully and frankly about it publicly because it's tricky. What do you say?
You're asking me?
Yes, sir.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know the inside of their marriage and, you know, any more than anybody else does, except for the fact that, you know, in my experience, they are kind of gaga about each other, although, you know, he is not deficient in the love zone. I mean, you know, he's I think ultimately that to talk to the caller's question, Bill Clinton managed to go through 8 years of attacks from Republicans, and he still is as loose. In fact, on the stump, speaking now, he's better than he ever was.
Yeah.
And, you know, my hope for her, just on a personal level, since I've experienced her sense of humor, which is really interesting and fun and ironic. Maybe not the kind of thing you want to show on the campaign trail, but she's got a great raucous belly laugh, and she's a palpable human being. You know, and I can say that I've had more honest conversations with her than I ever had with him. But it's ironic and sort of sad that you get the sense that she's not showing who she is in public.
Jill, I want to come back to those negatives that you mentioned before and the whole issue of polarization. You know, Jerry Falwell, I think it was, who said she'd bring out, you know, more opposition than Lucifer.
Right.
One of his last billboard statements there. 47-48% negative. Can you do it with that kind of negative rating? Or do we have such a groundswell on the Democrat side that it doesn't matter if it's even 49%? As long as they've got 51, they've got the candidate in?
Well, you know, I think a lot of it depends on what Joe just said, whether people get a sense of who she really is. And I think, you know, that's going to be, the marriage makes that more difficult. It's not transparent. It's not like John and Elizabeth Edwards coming out to talk about cancer. Their marriage is a great mystery to a lot of people. And that hurts, I think, because people don't understand it and they don't know what to make of it. On the other hand, you know, I tried to get through that stiffness when I spoke to her last month and said, explain to me, a person who could never have gone through what you have gone through in public life, what makes you come back for it? What makes you do it? How can you do this? And that did result in what Joe talks about, one of those big laughs. And she said, what am I scared of? Someone's going to say something bad about me?
Right. I've been there.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of been there, done that, doesn't matter anymore. So, and I did believe her, actually, when she said that, because otherwise, why would you put yourself through it?
And Joe, what about you on the negatives? Does it rev the GOP up so hot, if it's Hillary, that they may overcome, all the baggage they're carrying in this election season, or does she not have the same, you know, red cape effect on the GOP that she once did?
Well, I think that, you know, for a certain amount of certain number of people, the people who write letters for money, you know, that crowd, she's a big draw, you know, on the Republican side. But my guess is, and it's just my gut, nothing more, that it's less so than it might have been 2 or 3 or 4 years ago when I wrote that column that you mentioned earlier, in large part because this administration has been such a disaster. And it's very difficult for Republicans to, you know, and especially those who are not in the business of writing letters for money, who aren't political consultants. It's very difficult to demonize her, especially given the knowledge that she has in the areas that are most important to them, like Iraq. I mean, you talk to someone like Bill Kristol, you know, a leading neoconservative, and he acknowledges that she knows this stuff.
So running in a brand new day. We're out of time. Joe Klein at Time Magazine, great to have you. And Jill Lawrence at USA Today, always wonderful. Thanks to you both. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.